Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday morning. It is the 17th of December. Very nice to have you with us. Thank you very much for being a part of the program. Let me introduce the panel to you now, and then we'll get to the topics at hand. You can also join us roundtable at WAMC.org or WAMC.org/roundtable. And we will get to your letters in just a moment. I mean, first we have to talk about stuff. We'll get you good and excited.
Let's get right to the letters.
Yeah, that's
right. You know?
We'll start off with that, right? Let us introduce our panel. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hi.
There's the mic, sir.
Yeah, why don't you put that mic right in front of your face
hi,
there.
Hi.
There you go. University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rosemary. And WAMC's Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning.
Let's get to the topics at hand, and we'll begin with what's going on. A lot of news yesterday as I was sitting home sort of watching all of these alerts coming in.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll begin with the Freddie Gray mistrial. The judge declares a mistrial in the case of the officer charged in Freddie Gray's death. Jurors deliberated more than 16 hours over 3 days, but still could not reach a verdict in the trial of the first officer to face prosecution in Freddie Gray's death, forcing an already weary Baltimore to continue waiting for any resolution in a case that has strained the city for months. Hours after Baltimore City Circuit Court, after Baltimore Circuit Court Judge Barry Williams declared a mistrial on Wednesday, court officials announced that he would meet with attorneys Thursday to determine a new trial date. Perhaps no outcome could have better represented the mood in Baltimore, where residents are deeply divided about what led to and who should be held responsible for the fatal neck injury that Gray suffered in the back of a police van in April.
Well, look, it occurs to me that there are two things going on here. There is the very tense mood of people in Baltimore who have taken to the streets in the past. Then you get the political apparatus and to some degree the judicial, which has to decide whether or not there is a case, even if they would under ordinary circumstances not bring that case. So they arrest these five or six guys. They say that they're going to put them up there. And the first guy, basically, the jury says either nullifies or says there it just isn't the kind of proof that would allow us to convict here. And then you hold your breath and watch for what might happen in the streets as a result of the verdict. And I'm sure a lot of people in Baltimore are doing exactly that right now. So I suppose, to be clear, I am raising the question with some hesitation as to whether or not decisions to prosecute in some cases are made based on, relationship with a constituency.
Yeah, I think Alan is right. This was very hasty, this whole prosecution, the whole charging of six cops, within a month of the Freddie Gray death and the rioting. That's too soon to do many murder cases. That's a short period of time. And indeed, what you see is it's a rare instance to have a hung jury like this. So it isn't all put together. And the mistrial here endangers each of the next five trials because Porter, the guy who was basically let off for a while, cannot testify in those cases now. They're all scheduled. I don't know if the prosecution can delay them. If they cannot, those trials go ahead. He can't testify. He'll take the Fifth Amendment because he would incriminate himself if he testifies at all.
Would he even be allowed if his case was pending?
Well, he would be allowed, but I don't think under the Constitution he would have to say anything.
Just to clarify something you said, it is not murder, but involuntary manslaughter and second-degree assault.
Correct, yeah. Murder-related, yeah. That is true.
Look, there are many people in our society. We know this. We see some of the polling and after Trump says something that's particularly outrageous. There are many people in this society who really believe that whatever is trumps, public safety trumps anything else, and who will not vote to convict a policeman often of anything,
We saw that in Ferguson. That the prosecutor there might have brought an indictment, might have had an airing in court, and chose not to. Trayvon Martin, I think that was foreordained from the beginning not to get a guilty verdict against the assailant there. The law was clear. It was on his side. Bad law, definitely can argue that. But to put that in court, that seemed to be a political decision, not a legal decision.
Yeah. But if a cop does something really bad, and you know, and you're a prosecutor, that the chances of somebody being on that jury are going to say, no, we don't do this to policemen. They have to make these judgments on the fly. They have to do it under great duress and great pressure. If you know that, your record as a prosecutor, you got to think about that.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in the Chicago case, where the officer actually is a murder charge for shooting a black teenager 16 times.
You're right.
Lying about what had happened and then covering up, being part of a cover up, and that seems to be more developed. Perhaps the case itself is already a year old because we played out all this hiding the video stuff. So that will be an interesting one too. But we've gone from one extreme to the other, from not prosecuting ever to being too quick to prosecute, so you just ruin the case.
That was a criticism that was made when this all began to transpire.
Right, because the charges came so quickly.
And they came quickly because people were burning businesses in Baltimore.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about that. True.
I want to get to your point though about it being so quick. I mean, what's happened in April?
Yeah, the trial is going on now, but those charges against those men came within a month of the actual events.
Well, no, but I'm saying that's still quick.
Not if you compare it to most big cases like this. It takes a long time to bring them to court because you want, as a prosecutor, to nail down every detail.
No. I'm agreeing with you. I guess what I'm saying is that the whole thing seems to be like we're just moving a little faster
too fast.
We need to.
Okay. I'm agreeing with you.
No. I mean, I would think that the trials wouldn't have taken place until well into next year.
Exactly. And they didn't. And so it's a heightened atmosphere.
I'm agreeing with you.
I like that. I'm just unused to it. There's one other thing, one other factor in this case, and that is not just that the jurors had sympathy for cops in general. This cop himself on the stand was highly credible. He seemed conflicted.
But he was on for 4 hours.
He spoke for a long time, and he was honest, or at least seemed to be very honest and affected by what happened. He was not a cold-blooded murderer.
My question is the order of those being prosecuted? Mm-hmm. You know that it required some strategy. So is this the case that they thought would be the slam dunk?
No, they always knew that all of them would be difficult, but his testimony was critical to each of the other cases because he was alone in the back with Gray.
So this
one
house
is the
of
van
cards.
Driver, the other were the cops who did the arrest. This is the only cop who was in that van when it's careening around the city.
So if he, in fact, we have a mistrial, we'll get another trial. If he is not convicted, then is this a house of cards situation where all the rest just go down?
That's what the prosecutors fear, absolutely. And it may even happen now that it's a mistrial. He won't get a retrial before at least two of the other defendants go to trial. They're scheduled for early January.
They can't expedite that?
I don't know. The judge is meeting with them, so we'll see what's going to happen. Can they delay the other ones? If I were a defense attorney, I'd be screaming speedy trial and prejudice against my client. But
And speaking of prejudice, this officer, I happen to think it means something, but there will be people who don't, is of color.
He's a black man.
He's a black
yes.
man, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't know what.
And he knew Freddie Gray. It's not like he was some outsider who he knew them. That's what I said. He was an excellent witness for himself.
He was.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back and continue our conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Yum Yum Noodle Bar, Woodstock in Kingston, now open 7 days for lunch and dinner and taking reservations for holiday catering. YumYumNoodleBar.com. Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, since 1996, a web design and internet marketing firm working to help businesses get found on the internet. Mannixmarketing.com. And the Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday 10 to 5 and Sunday 12 to 5. HydeCollection.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a few letters and then we'll get on to another story somewhat related.
Right. We heard from a guy who identifies himself as, parenthesis, another Steve from Narrowsburg, New York. Freddie Gray, it should be known that in some large cities it's quite routine that police officers will give prisoners a, quote, rough ride for fun or punishment, unbuckled in the back of the closed box truck that they're transported in. Yep, I think that's something that was of concern here. And Wesley says, it turns out that Ray's comment yesterday about time served in the Senate for nominees had merit. If not, these are political nominees, in other words, guys who are running for president.
Yeah, I remember.
Good, that's good. If nominated, Cruz will have served the same amount of time in the Senate as Obama did. If nominated, Rubio will have served two more years than Obama. And that's from Wes in Schenectady. And James says, no, he sent me a cartoon.
And, Can you describe it for the listeners?
Yeah. There's the tea guy, and his tongue is coming out of his mouth, right?
Okay, you mean Trump?
Yeah.
Okay.
The tea guy.
Okay. He's sticking out his tongue.
And there's an elephant standing next to him,
oh,
and
I
they're
see.
Both they're angry at each other. Mm. So the elephant's tusk, what do they call that? Not tusk,
trunk.
Trunk.
Yeah.
Is now all tied up with
you
with,
feeling better?
With Trump's
no.
with Trump's tongue.
Yeah.
And that's why
that's
it's
terrific.
Called tongue tied.
Well, that's funny. Next,
Ray enjoyed it.
Well, I don't see anything else. Do you, Joe?
I do not. No. So let us go to the other story that is making news, and that is Ferguson, somewhat related story regarding police and force. Officials in Ferguson, Missouri have reached the outlines of a deal with the Justice Department that would force changes to the city's police department and head off a civil rights lawsuit alleging years of unconstitutional policing. Local and federal officials report. Completing the deal, however, will require support from diverse factions of Ferguson's leadership, which will have to sell residents on the idea of a federal policing monitor and of huge new expenses for a city that is already struggling financially. Some officials said a local tax increase appears unavoidable, which in Missouri requires approval from voters.
Yeah, there's deep irony to me that to get improvement in Ferguson, its residents are going to have to pay a lot of money. They're going to see a tax increase if this goes through. It looks like it is going to go through.
The poor and middle class people who right. are struggling
who
have
are
to
the,
pay more.
Right. The upstart of the death of Michael. What was his last name? God, it slipped out of my head. Mm. The death of that black teenager.
Brown. Right? Michael
yeah,
Brown,
Michael
right?
Brown. That's right. Yeah. It's a common name. Was that the kind of policing that got the department in trouble going after minor offenses and then charging major fines? They made a lot of money doing that. That's how they were financing the city. And that, of course, was on the back of low and middle income people. And that has been stopped. That's the reform. And it should be. But the result is that the town is more broke than ever. And it's going to have huge new expenses, putting in a federal monitor, putting in new training and reforms that the police are required
why,
to do.
Why is the city required to pay for the federal monitor? $350,000 for the first year. How about the feds
right.
pay for the federal monitor?
Well, because they're Yeah, I mean, they're saying that the system, their system, the city system, is broken, and they have to fix it.
Okay, so if the federal government thinks that is the case, then put a monitor in there. Believe me, the government payroll in Washington is pretty big. I think $350,000 they can do.
Why is he making that much?
Yes, that's another question.
$350,000? He could be a college president for that.
Oh, ouch. Was that a shot?
That was a shot.
That was a hit right there.
All right, let's take a break. We'll continue our conversation on these issues and others. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. WAMC.org/roundtable to post online. And we will continue our conversation after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. Very nice to have you aboard. And we go to some letters and then we'll go on to other topics and then we'll move on with our lives, right?
Okay, all right. Cody says, roundtable, Freddie Gray. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Even though the case against the officer was rushed and a verdict wasn't reached, hopefully the prosecution of this officer and others will make police officers think twice about abusing their power and thinking they can get away with it. And that's from Cody. Well, it's interesting because the officer, as you know, said he knew that the rules were that you're supposed to strap the guy in. But he said, we never do that. So, and it sounded reasonable to some. All right, Ken. As a New Yorker, I don't think I should have to pay to monitor out-of-control Rebs in Ferguson, Missouri.
He doesn't want to pay for that war
from the 1850s. They made the mess. They should pay for it, which they were already trying to do to avoid by using an oversized police force to milk the poorest in the community through fines and paying a fair tax rate. And that's from Ken. And Jamie says, until police departments are asked to maintain the real mores of society, we have little hope of ending the many police issues we now face. The fact that they're asked to enforce standards that they are completely different than the way we live creates isolation of police, resulting in police considering the populace they control as civilians as if they are no part of civil society. We also must stop asking police to fulfill social work function when we only give them tools to do security work. Tom says, good morning, Roundtable.
Good morning.
I would suggest that Ferguson needs to pay the $350,000 as punishment for running a bankrupt funding system by using cops as tax collectors. Huh. Well. Rosemary says, not you, different Rosemary. If a person is disabled by handcuffs, the police have taken responsibility for their safety. No exceptions. Good point. If the transport vehicle is such that a prisoner can be fatally injured at the point of death, that is then it is the department's responsibility to change it. Indeed, indeed.
You know, one thing about that case is the judges clamped all kinds of security on information. So we don't know how it was deadlocked. Was it one holdout? Was it split, you know, half of the jurors guilty, half not? I wish that I knew this. This would explain.
Eventually you'll know it, right?
We may. I think he may be right to want to keep that secret because it could affect the outcome of the other trials. But it is important information.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, is there any more? No. No. William wanted to know, what is the mix of black and white on the jury? Do we know?
I don't know that.
I believe 7 African Americans, 6
something like that.
White.
It was evenly split.
Yeah.
That's, I think,
male,
is the,
female,
I
black, right. White. It was split up.
Roundtable at WAMC.org, if you would like to join us, roundtable at WAMC.org or WAMC.org/roundtable. The Federal Reserve said on Wednesday, I know you talked about this a little bit yesterday, the Federal Reserve said on Wednesday that it would raise short-term interest rates for the first time since the financial crisis, a decision it described as a vote of confidence in the American economy, even as much of the rest of the world struggles. The widely anticipated announcement that the Fed would raise rates to a range between 0.25% and 0.5% signals the beginning of the end for the central bank's stimulus program.
Well, not being an economist, I can only say that the reaction has been phenomenal, not only here in the United States, but internationally. And the economists I was hearing on the Beeb in the morning at 2:30 when I was driving in or whatever were suggesting that this might be good for the states in terms of buttressing the dollar, but not so good for some of the emerging economies where people would take their money out of those places and put it into the United States markets. However, this morning we are seeing a vote of affirmation from all over the world.
The markets.
Yeah, the markets.
The markets are really, really great. I'm waiting for my credit card companies, those rapacious, I want to say a bad word, I can't say on the radio.
Users.
Those rapacious, yeah, users who are going to up rates, and they've been waiting for this as the excuse to go.
And so,
pay off your credit card debt. That's
does
the
this
lesson.
Pay a political price? Will those in power pay a political price when people start complaining about that?
I don't know that people are close enough to that to understand that they can make a connection between their legislators and the action, Ray.
Well, it is an election cycle, and I suspect some people will make that connection for them rather loudly.
I see.
Uh-huh. Do you?
Well, I have a friend. He's always been condescending to me over my life, and I don't want to use his full name. Let's just call him Mike. Whenever Roselle and I are talking and she says something to me that is, I consider to be, you know, condescending, I respond in kind by saying,
I see.
Thank you. I see, Mike.
Okay. Thank you.
We're ready to move
on? Enlightening. I think we're definitely ready
okay.
to move on.
All right. Rosemary, thank you very much. Let's go on to, what's wrong, Ray?
Nothing.
You're ready to move on?
I'm ready to move out.
Okay. let's see. Let me get to, hold on. I'm having technical difficulties here.
About Malala.
Oh, yeah. Malala.
Well, we can talk about that. Sure, we can talk about that. So,
take it, Rosemary.
Malala Yousafzai, who is a Nobel Prize winning young woman who her backstory is horrific and horrible, and which we'll talk about in just a second. But but what ultimately happened yesterday, she came out. She is a young Muslim woman and said that, hey, look, what Trump is saying is hate speech, and we need to do something to cure that in the world. Do you have the article right there?
I do, sir.
That would be
very you're having technical difficulties?
I am having technical difficulties. So she survived a Taliban shooting in 2012. She has been very much both through a very successful book and a documentary, really a beacon for people around the world to look at these issues. And she said, it's really tragic that you hear these comments, which are full of hatred, full of this ideology of being discriminative toward others. She is the youngest Nobel Prize laureate, and she said that she basically says it's full of hatred, and I don't know what you do.
Yeah, out of the mouths of babes was my first reaction when I saw this. And here's a young woman. She is an advocate for education for girls, something that extremist Muslims are not in favor of, like the Taliban, are not in favor of. And she was shot in the head. So here's a young woman, incredibly brave and so principled, and she's shot in the head, and she still makes more sense than Donald Trump. And it's true that he has set up a division between us and them that can only help them to recruit more people to work against us. And she's saying there's a different way. She's living proof that there's a different way to do it. And that's to include everyone and to bring them into to see the similarities, to see the commonality of people, and to work with them.
And I love the fact that she's Muslim and she's showing up.
Yep.
Showing up is a big part of this, and showing the American people just who, you know, Muslims are in our society.
Right. This is the look of a Muslim, not the picture that Donald Trump and the other Republican candidates seem to be painting.
When you look at a story like this, and I mean, Ray, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but, you know, raising this of what is the newsworthiness of a story like this, meaning that we know that a lot of this is filled with hatred. But I think when it gives it a perspective, as Alan indicates, of showing up and having someone in the community, in the Muslim community, saying this, and especially someone who has gone through what she's gone through. I think it has a special weight. Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. Has a special weight.
Well, my only point was it doesn't take a Nobel Prize to maybe make the connection that there may be some issues at play with the statements. That's all.
No, you're right. I understand that. No, I
probably go on the street and probably get.
Trump was on the Jimmy Kimmel show last night. Did you see that?
I did not.
He struck a conciliatory kind of gentler tone, which we noted he also did in the debate. Now that he thinks he might be the nominee, and he said, "Well, yes, I'm partly to blame for this. I've been a little bit divisive." At which Jimmy Kimmel dissolved into laughter. Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll get some letters. We'll go to other topics. And you can join in. Roundtable at WAMC.org. WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Simmons Recovery Consulting, advocating for public entities that are recipients of a FEMA disaster, specializing in financial strategy development and grants management. SimmonsRecoveryConsulting.com. Pave tile, wood, and stone, using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone. Showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. And The Black Sheep, a New York deli and European-style bakery in downtown Amherst, celebrating their 13th anniversary as a cafe, caterer, and offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com.
All right, we are back. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org and WAMC.org/roundtable. Let us go to some letters, and then we will hit some other topics that we have.
Oh, boy. So Dan says, "Good morning, folks." Pardon me. "It seems clear that prosecutors have many ways of protecting the police they work with every day, like with George Zimmerman, just a wannabe cop. The officer in Chicago and any other officer who actually gets charged, prosecutors choose charges that they know going in that they cannot get convictions for." I don't think anyone anywhere thinks the officer in Chicago planned to kill McDonald, so first-degree murder will not be provable.
I don't think he was charged with first-degree murder. I think it's second. We'll have to check that.
Interesting. Dave says, "Hello.
Hello.
Okay. I don't see the relevance of all the unending coverage of the trial in Baltimore. It's a predominantly black city run by blacks. They'll figure it out. There must be more news around the country that is going unreported because of the sensationalism of the Baltimore issue."
Oh, my gosh. I don't get that. How is that sensational? It is indeed a black city with major problems and drugs and crime and trouble between the races. What is more important to cover than that?
I agree with you, Rosemary. I mean, we have had this issue develop since the Civil War. We have... And the rise of the KKK and the demonizing of people and segregating of people. And this is the outcome. And I think this is perfectly appropriate to be covering.
Mm-hmm.
Big time. And he gave an example of what other news. And he says, "For example, I heard on BBC that they arrested the creep who jacked up the drug prices 5,000%. I didn't hear that on U.S. Network News. By the way, neither did I."
Oh, no. I actually was going to be our next story.
Okay.
It came over about, I don't know, a half hour ago.
Okay. We were on.
We were here.
Yeah.
So that's why you didn't hear it. It hadn't happened yet. We can't cover news that hasn't happened yet. That would
be
hard.
Excused. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay. So we're done with the letters?
Good? Not really.
Okay. Well, we'll finish with that, and then we'll
panel.
Move on.
Hello.
Good morning. Rosemary always seems to be 2 days behind the facts. Cops on trial had filed papers for a fast trial, his rights under the law. DA wanted to try his case last and trial of cop driver first. Rosemary, do you want us to believe that you were really up watching Jimmy Kimmel, or did you watch the clip, which doesn't always show the full context? Alan, he isn't much more current than she is.
Nice.
So he was getting us all here.
Oh, that's great.
Both commentators seem to get their major information from network news media, not me, folks. Which is quite often tainted with the poor delivery and bias of some of their individuals. Okay, and then it goes on and on.
Well, maybe he could just call us every day and tell us what we should know.
It's a she.
She obviously knows.
Yeah, okay, so that's that.
Okay, well, good for both of you.
Okay, well, what?
I just think it's insulting because, I mean, most people, I think all of us get our news from so many different places.
Yeah, it's true.
Online, I mean, like everybody. It's not. I don't even know if you could get that on.
All right, rise above.
Go ahead.
And Sheldon, I am an occasional listener to the roundtable. I find that the panel is usually intelligent and well informed, but generally speak in the same liberal voice. I think that it would be beneficial to all of us if from time to time you have a conservative voice on the panel, which we have done, and we have an open invitation to Rich Honan. And while I don't like to say this, and while he doesn't like me to say this, Ray is always capable of making sure devil's advocacy, that we understand the other
side. Why don't you get Herb London on?
That's true. I would like to
hear. We invited him.
Yeah?
I would like to hear how they defend their position and how they would attack the panels. And that's from Sheldon. Okay, thank you, Sheldon, for that. Appreciate it. Let's see here. And Chris says, back to Freddie Gray. Good morning. How about putting cameras in the prisoner transportation vehicles?
Well, the police, if they're wearing them, they'd have a camera inside those vehicles. I think that's
Well, is there somebody sitting back there with them?
Well, it was this officer Porter who was on trial. He was the one sitting back there with the prisoner, yes.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's a good point, Rosemary. And Barbara says, read Trump on the Jimmy Kimmel show. We at all times find Trump amusing, mostly for his ridiculous facial expressions and mannerisms. But wouldn't it make more sense for us to find absolutely nothing funny about him? Our laughing at him only serves to encourage him. And in short time, we will find nothing amusing about the hate and fear as it spreads. And Michael says, I would like to see the Muslim community doing something more to demonstrate on the street against the extremists. All right. And I don't know. No, I'm afraid not, Joe. I think that's it.
All right. Then let's go to other news. And hey, do we want to talk about the budget deal?
Well, it's an interesting deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting deal.
So what does it mean? Who are the winners and losers in the budget deal that came to fruition yesterday?
Well, it's a very good question. I can tell you why. Because we have this new guy, Speaker Ryan, who had to pass muster with the conservatives in his conference. And who did? He had them up against the wall, of course, because they didn't have anybody to run. But now he's a guy who is committed to, quote, getting things done. And what you find in this very complicated budget agreement is all kinds of stuff that he can take credit for. And, for example, in Obamacare, the so-called Cadillac tax, which it turns out they were going to tax the government, anybody who had paid for a Cadillac type of healthcare package, and you would have to pay a greater tax on it. Well, it turns out that the so-called Cadillac tax was not good either for rich people, but also, as Cadillac would imply, but also for the unions and others, because it was the kind of benefit that they were getting for their people. So there was almost a unified group of people who said, this is a bad idea. It was an Obama idea, obviously. He has to stand behind it. But it was one that that immediately gets taken up by all kinds of people on all kinds of sides. And I think that Speaker Ryan gets a lot of credit for that one, deservedly or not. And then there were many other things in this budget package.
Yeah, good thing about it to me is that we have Democrats and Republicans.
Did you read all 2009 pages?
I stayed up all night while I was watching Jimmy Kimmel.
Right after Jimmy Kimmel.
So this just happened. I'm not 2 days behind, only a little bit. But Republicans and Democrats negotiated in this. There's Ryan gets some credit, but also everyone who sat down and actually acted like lawmakers. They put together.
And the president, by the way.
Yeah.
Don't think that they weren't in those conferences. They were.
Of course. They put together a budget. Neither side won completely, and we didn't have to shut down the government. Wow. We're back to the way things are supposed to work. And it lasts for a while, too. We don't have to have another crisis in 2 months. Ray, what do you think of it?
I don't know. What do we do without a crisis? We have an hour to fill every day.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. We heard from Sheldon, who said you guys are basically liberal, have a liberal orientation. And I
we
think
do.
To some degree that's true, although not always. I didn't
Commie.
Like it. I think, and this is the point about compromise, I think, that you make often, Rosemary.
Mm-hmm.
I think the liberal side lost in this thing.
Nancy Pelosi not happy over parts of this.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, she would have to say that.
Some of the tax cuts that have been now institutionalized, they're not temporary. She's not going to like it, but I bet she's rounding up the votes to get it through.
She has to because
that's her job.
She doesn't want a crisis. And you're right to bring up the tax cut. Issue. There are all kinds of really good tax cuts for really rich people. Mm-hmm. And they're in there, and they are now ensconced as a result of this, quote, deal. Mm-hmm. She has a constituency, and she has to mollify them, but at the same time, she has to argue with her people that they got to pass this thing.
Right.
And she's got to stick up for what people won't like. She's got to tell them it's wrong.
As we promised, the story that broke this morning, Martin Shkreli, a pharmaceutical entrepreneur and former hedge fund manager who has been widely criticized for drug price gouging, was arrested this morning by federal authorities. The investigation in which Shkreli had been charged with securities fraud is related to his time as a hedge fund manager and running the biopharmaceutical company Retrofin. Not the price gouging controversy that has swirled around him, because he's now chief executive and founder of Turing Pharmaceuticals, which had drawn scrutiny for acquiring a decades-old drug and raising the price of it overnight to $750 a pill from $13.50.
Right. So I'd like to be on that jury.
Where are they located?
He was despicable. That was just a terrible act.
Well, it's the same thing that happened to Shelley Silver and to Dean Skelos.
It is.
I mean, well, it is in that
Manhattan.
These guys are so unpopular.
Yeah.
That, you know, the jury took one look at the cesspool known as Albany and said, okay, guilty.
Is this another Preet Bharara?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Because it's Manhattan. Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's in if the arrest is made in Manhattan, it would be.
Interesting.
So Joe's looking on the thingy there.
To find out.
So I don't know.
So you think he cannot get a fair trial
because so
that the drug guy cannot get a fair trial because
it depends
so
on
hated.
Your Weltanschauung.
I beg your pardon.
It depends on your worldview.
God bless you.
If your worldview is that this guy's terrible, I'm simply saying that the jury, if they allow that other stuff to get into those so-called, you know. Stock thing, if they allow the other thing about how much a pill costs, as I said, I'd like to be sitting on that jury.
Right. I want to know what law he was charged under because I'm betting it was legal. Not good, but legal.
So they were out to get him and this is a show trial?
Yes.
Well, I don't know enough about it to my critics. But yeah, I think that's a possibility.
Okay. Maybe Jimmy Kimmel will have him on and we can find out.
The federal charges are believed to be parallel a civil lawsuit filed against Shkreli. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Shkreli in August by Retrofin, whose board ousted him as chief executive in September of 2014. In its lawsuit, Retrofin accused Shkreli of having used the company as a kind of personal piggy bank to help pay off upset investors who lost money at the hedge fund MSMB. Along the ways he did this, the lawsuit says, was by hiring some of these investors as sham consultants to Retrofin.
I just got to say, we got a lot of squirrelies running around our yard.
Hey!
We feed them peanuts at my house.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I can't have a pet, a cat or a dog, so I...
So you pet the squirrels.
The squirrels and the blue jays, hey. Yeah.
Yeah, all seems healthy. Good.
Yeah.
Good. Why not? Got anything else to say?
No.
We're
done
on that.
Reveal too much.
Yeah,
because I mean, there's people who take like it, which I've never really understood, but they, you know, they work against the squirrels.
Oh no, there are.
Anti-squirrelites.
I have a very good woman colleague up at SUNY who used to had a dog, and the dog's name was Morris, and they let the squirrely out there, and the dog would chase him up the top of the pole, and this went on all day long. It was quite a sight.
So the new segment on the program is at 9:56. It's the off-the-rails segment of the roundtable.
Well, when you got nothing else to talk about at
talking,
that moment.
Petting squirrels with Rosemary Armeo.
Invite the squirrels.
Them. I just give them peanuts, that's all. I do have the neighbor, Tony George, who has one of the great gardens of Colony, and he is not so appreciative of my squirrel efforts.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, I can.
I can understand that.
Sure, right. Everybody's got a perspective.
Well, we thank you very much for checking in this morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about your garden creatures. Have you named it?
Simon.
Simon the Vole.
Simon the Vole.
Very nice.
You had a raccoon,
birds.
Didn't you?
I did, yeah. Several.
You name your birds? They're regular birds?
Yeah. Like Jack and...
Really? So you know that cardinal's name is Jack?
I have no idea. If it's the same cardinal, I have no idea. But I know that if a cardinal shows up...
We really are off the rails.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
Okay.
I think it's important to discuss these projects. This is the interesting stuff of life.
And we'll talk about other interesting stuff after this break.